Hockey's given me everything that I have today. It gave me my sickness. It's given me a life after hockey, being able to just be tenacious enough to try to find treatments and cure myself of mild dementia and these brain injury symptoms, and hopefully just carrying a message of hope to others.
Welcome to the Mittland Money Mindset. This is a podcast that's all about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money. In every episode, we go deep with engaging guests who provide tangible takeaways and a whole lot of joy along the way. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I enjoyed having them. Let's dive into today's show. I'm Larry Sprung, your host for the Mittland Money Mindset and founder and wealth advisor of Mittland Financial. Today's guest is Daniel Carcillo, former NHLer, mental health advocate, and entrepreneur. Daniel Carcillo, known as Carbomb during his professional ice hockey career, is on a journey from the rink to a powerful voice for mental health awareness and player safety, along with exercising his entrepreneurial spirit. Dan's hockey career spanned 10 seasons, where he played for the Flyers, Blackhawks, and New York Rangers. Known for his gritty playing style and physicality, he played a crucial role in the Blackhawks' 2013 and 2015 Stanley Cup championship victories. After hockey, Dan embarked on a new mission to bring attention to the mental health challenges faced by athletes, particularly in the hockey community after suffering from concussion-related symptoms. Through working with foundations like No Fallen Heroes, he has worked tirelessly to provide resources, education, and support for individuals navigating mental health challenges, including athletes and veterans. Dan has been a prominent figure in speaking out against the toxic culture within professional hockey, and his courage in sharing his own struggles has ignited conversations and spurred positive changes within the sport. Outside of his advocacy efforts, Dan has also ventured into entrepreneurship. He co-founded the companies Wisana Health, Healing Realty Trust, and My Crude Doses, which all have focuses on mental health and wellness. Listen in for some great takeaways about Dan's journey from hockey enforcer to mental health advocate and his burning passion for creating positive change while trying to create a supportive environment within the world of sports. Well, I have the pleasure today of being with Daniel Carcillo, former NHLer, mental health advocate, and entrepreneur. And as most of our listeners know, Dan, I love talking about hockey. I love talking about mental health because it's something I'm very passionate about. And I love talking about entrepreneurs. So you hit on all three marks. So welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And, you know, I'll start off by saying that I'm a diehard Ranger fan. So I loved when you played for us in the Garden. It was definitely a treat to see you there.
That was a nice run. That was a nice run we had. Yeah. That
would have been not really so much cool when you were playing against us with some of those other teams that you played for. But
yeah, with the Flyers and the Blackhawks. Yeah, I mean, that was 2014. It was a special time with Marty, and it would have been amazing to get that done in that city. But yeah, I have a lot of really great memories from it.
They're still struggling to get that done, but we'll see how that goes. So for those listeners out there, I talk a lot about hockey. So some may know who you are. Some may not be hockey. They may be on the entrepreneurial side of things. Can you just give folks a little bit of background about who Dan Carcillo is and kind of your path? And then we'll jump into the NHL stuff and then what you're up to today. But maybe you could just give them a 10,000-foot view of who you are.
I am about to turn 39, where my wife has said numerous times that it's gross. I'm from King City, Ontario. So I grew up in Canada, a small farming town. And really, a lot of our community revolved around the rink. Got drafted to the NHL when I was 17 years old, 72nd or 73rd overall. I started my NHL career right out of high school when I was 19, played 10 years. And I was able to win 2 Stanley Cups with the Blackhawks. I had 4 chances at it. We lost one with the Rangers and one with the Flyers In 2010, I had 164 fights. I had 7 diagnosed concussions. And when I retired, I was forced into retirement because of my symptoms. I had mild dementia, so light sensitivity, slurred speech, headache, head pressure, classic post-concussion syndrome. From 2015 to 2019, spent time and money in the medical system. Couldn't get any better. Went to do an alternative therapy in Denver, Colorado of a decriminalized medicine. I was able to regain my brain health and quality of life within 3 months. Got brain scans with no abnormalities and blood work that was totally clear. And I turned that into a business. I patented the regimen that I created with a PhD biochemist using natural medicine. And we built a deck to communicate the story. Found partners to raise, to help me raise money, which I didn't really know how to do or how to network. Then we took it public on the CSE within 3 months of raising $16 million. And we started to develop our FDA program, introduced to the FDA back in March of 2021, and just kind of learned that whole game. And then now just really entrenched since 2019 in advocacy. So do a lot on congressional hearings and briefings on Capitol Hill through the Psychedelic Medicine Coalition with Melissa Lavasani and support veterans. That's this t-shirt that I'm wearing, that this medicine's positively impacted their life. This is No Fallen Heroes and Matthew Wiz Buckley. And yeah, just using my story to try to show people how to responsibly use this medicine, recover from concussion, mental health symptoms, but also well people, executives can use this to gain an edge on the competition.
Interesting. So did it gain FDA approval?
No. So we did an IND, which is called Investigational New Drug Application. We had our meeting and it was extremely successful. But what happened was the markets kind of took a turn for the worse. We were on the Canadian Stock Exchange, which has its own issues. Our stock was pretty much untouchable. So it was extremely hard for me to raise money. So I ended up finding a new home for it. I sold it to a NASDAQ listed company. We also owned and operated 3 ketamine clinics, which I sold prior to the FDA program. I was hoping that this company was going to develop it. Didn't really know what was going to happen with me and if I was going to move on. But I've since moved on to some other projects and we're obviously really proud of what we were able to do.
Gotcha. Listen, I applaud you for all of your work within the mental health space and the concussion space, because I don't know if you're aware or not, I lost my brother-in-law about 20 years ago to suicide.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank you. Ever since then, I sat on the national board for about 14 years of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And it's something that's very important to me and my family. And I've been a mental health advocate since his passing in 2004. So it's people like you, people like me, that we continue that conversation, that hopefully veterans and other folks that are suffering out there will feel more comfortable to find the assistance that they need and be able to come out of the darkness and find a way to live a healthier life. So thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah. I was doing kind of a year-end inventory, as people do. I was pretty astonished to find out that the second leading cause of death for men between 18 and I think it's 45 or 50 is suicide. I really believe it's partly because there's no sense of community or like coming of age or sense of understanding who you are. And obviously men have an issue talking. So hopefully through my story, I've obviously gotten a lot of messages saying people looked at me as like one of these tough guys that, and they think that tough guys aren't sensitive when it's, I'm extremely sensitive. I encourage if anybody's listening out there and you're struggling to go and research these treatments. There's tons of different treatments, and I'm not just talking about medicine treatment. There's float tanks and hyperbaric chambers and peptides and IVs and getting out in the sunlight. And there's so many new things that you can try. And if you like what you hear and you like what you see and you're struggling, just make sure to find me or find some type of community that you can engage in, because the alternative is scary, but getting out of it is pretty rewarding.
Agree. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know you kind of glossed over the highlights of your time in the NHL. Can you share a bit about it? Like, what were some of the real meaningful points in your career that you're like, when you think back about your time in the NHL, you immediately go to those points in time?
I think breaking into the NHL was pretty cool. So I graduated high school at 19 and went right into the AHL, which is kind of like a feeder team in the Pittsburgh Penguins system. Played a year and a half there, and then I got called up to Arizona, where Wayne Gretzky was my coach. Grant Fear was there. Ulf Samuelsson was the D coach. So it was like pretty cool to be coached by the great one in Arizona. Those first 2 years really stuck out in my mind. I really made a name for myself. He liked the way I played because I was so old school. And the game was kind of just starting to get into this new phase of like people were like, well, I'm gluten-free now and some weird things. That really sticks out. Then I got traded to Philly because I asked for a trade. I just really wanted to be in a market where I was going to feel wanted and appreciated because the style that I played, Philly was my favorite team growing up. So kind of serendipitous that I ended up there. It was just really cool to have a city like that just be behind
Broad Street Bullies.
Yeah, it was nice. And then, I mean, we had an amazing run in 2010. We got in on the last shootout against the Rangers. Giroux scored against Lundqvist and Jokinen got stopped by Brian Boucher. So that was cool. Mike Richards, Scott Hartnell, Aaron Asham, all the guys that were Jeff Carter, all the guys that were on that team. We were so close. It was great. Those were some really formidable years. And then when I got to Chicago, after we lost in 2010 to the Blackhawks, I signed with Chicago, came to that city, met Steve Monitor, a really good friend. At that point, I had like kind of a decision to make. I was a pretty wild boy on and off the ice. And I started getting hurt and these sorts of things. So that was the first time I asked for help. And then I went to learn about meditation and breath work and these kind of like holistic tools to get down after a game. I don't think too many guys talk about we're on at 7 p.m. till midnight. And then we get home and you're still or you're flying to another city, et cetera. So like getting down, classic muscle relaxers, opiates were really big. That was when that pandemic was just kind of starting, alcohol. So I formed some habits that I wanted to break. So when I got to Chicago, met Steve Monitor, he helped me break them. And then, man, my last 5 years in the league, I went to the Stanley Cup Finals 4 times with 3 different teams. So yeah, all of it. Winning is obviously something that we all want to do, right? And so when you dedicate so much of your young life to one thing, getting to the top of the echelon in the mountain, in calling yourself the best hockey team in the world 2 times over is pretty damn cool. Yeah. And then, you know, hockey's given me everything that I have today. It gave me my sickness. It's given me a life after hockey, being able to just be tenacious enough to try to find treatments and cure myself of mild dementia and these brain injury symptoms and hopefully just carrying a message of hope to others.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second, because your Players Tribune article about head trauma was a powerful one. Can you share why you felt you needed to step forward and address the health of your brain? Like, what was that moment that said, hey, I got to do something about this?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So it was 2014-15, my last season. We won our second Stanley Cup. So I'll give you the sequence of events. We started the year in 14. My son was born in November. Season starts in September. So that was amazing because all I've ever wanted to do was be a dad. So he was born. So I was like, my dad worked a lot. And that's just kind of how he showed his love. And I was like, I don't really want to travel for 186 days a year. I want to like be there with him, right? So I kind of had 1 foot out the door. And then Steve had been struggling with concussions. He had 19. He was cleared for 19 in the league. Me and him were obviously still talking. And he ended up passing away in February. That really crushed me. I remember getting the call while it was during pregame. My phone kept buzzing, 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 buzzing. Something's not right. So I picked it up and that crushed me spiritually, mentally, physically. I was kind of already at the end of my rope. That was 10 years, a long time to be a pro hockey player. And what sealed the deal was I got my 7th concussion in March. I asked to not play again, but we'd already made the playoffs and I got in against Philly, believe it or not. And I was just so dejected and sad and angry, frustrated, all the things that I wanted to fight and I wanted to get hit, got my 7th concussion. And those symptoms lingered for 4 or 5 weeks, which really scared me. I just had a decision to make where I was really angry and frustrated and sad. And I wanted to understand, like I watched the Blackhawks clear him for 4 concussions in a matter of 12 weeks, which would be a detriment to anybody, regardless if it was his 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th concussion. So I just wanted to make a video. And I thought, I knew I was going to basically cut off my foot to keep my hand, meaning you don't say anything bad about professional sports, especially the NHL. If you step out of line, that community will effectively cut you off. But I was making a conscious decision to cut myself off from this community. So I called the Players Tribune. It was the first video that we made. And I just sat in my living room and you can still see the pain and hear it in my voice. I still didn't remove myself to understand all the things that were happening to me emotionally. And I just made a call to arms. Like, we need trainers telling me to just stay home and then come to the rink when I didn't have symptoms. That's not good enough, right? Like, we need some sort of better diagnostic and some sort of better recovery. And I need to honor my friend. So I made this video. I like to think I'm smart and calculated. Hockey doesn't get watched a lot, right? So I made the video and I dropped it before the Stanley Cup Finals because it's the only time that there's so much press. And it just, it blew up. And then I retired. And I retired again with a lot of vitriol. I didn't go to the banner raising. I kind of left the country 4 days after. I was super sick. And that's really when the biggest fight in my life started, where I had to figure out where all these concussion symptoms were coming from and how to fix my brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's some story. But at the same time, I think that it really started paving the way for a lot more attention to be placed on these injuries and things that hopefully, I think you probably know better than I do. I think they're taking it a little bit more seriously today. I'm not sure that we're there yet, but I think we're a lot better than where we were, let's say, 10 years ago, for sure.
There's a lot more awareness. There's a lot more education. The NHL is still a professional league that doesn't admit a link between repetitive head trauma and neurodegenerative disease. They're the last league on earth. And I mean, there's a pretty clear correlation. It's like smoking doesn't cause lung cancer, right? Like, I've really tried to put myself in a space of not highlighting the problems, because that seems to attract more negativity into my life. I just made a decision at a point in 2019 where I was suicidal. I was creating kind of my own hell. And I just move over here now, where there's always going to be corporations and businesses and sports that are going to make people sick. I want to just live over here where people can know, once you do get sick, we can help you.
Right.
So,
yeah. I think that's a good place to be.
Yeah. And they've moved up like the age of hitting and stuff. They have made a few adjustments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have made some adjustments. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. Now, as a dad whose son is most likely going to be moving on to juniors next year, and somebody whose son's friends and contemporaries, some of them are arguably in juniors now or entering next year or in the next couple of years, what compelled you to come forward about your situation and your story of abuse during your junior hockey days? What made you come out about that?
So I actually got triggered in, I think it was 2016 or 17. I don't remember exactly. There was a story from St. Mike's Academy, which I grew up in Toronto. It's a pretty well-known, prevalent, in a very rich, affluent neighborhood in Toronto, downtown Toronto. It was a story of these kids basically getting sodomized as a part of a ritual, as part of a hazing act, which is completely not the act being normal, but the act of hazing and initiating rookies is completely normal and has been for 4 or 5 decades. All of a sudden, I had this panic attack when I read the story, and I was still dealing with my concussion and all the anger and all the things spiritually. I remember walking to the washroom and my wife seeing me, I had to get like take a cold shower, and she's like, "What's going on?" And I said, "I don't really know," you know. And then I just started to think about junior. So I had this nickname Car Bomb on the ice, and I'm a very gentle, sensitive, that's not who I was, but what I realized then playing this back is I was hazed sexually, physically, emotionally abused by both coaches and about 13 guys for the course of a year. It was really bad. And it was just all that trauma kind of coming back. And I also realized too that, good or bad, I've gotten into this place where I can talk about trauma and be thankful for it, because I don't know if I would have had such a long career if that didn't happen to me and if I didn't play the way that Car Bomb played. So at the end of the day, it is wrong. And one thing I do know how to do is hold people accountable. I had a platform at the time. It was Bullying Awareness Week, and I just decided to write about it. And I think I wrote like a 9 or 10 page post on Twitter, and I put it out there, and it got a ton of traction. And then, and now we have this class action lawsuit moving through Canada, and I'm the lead plaintiff. And I just want to make sure that it doesn't happen again. I want to make sure that there's oversight with these leagues. And I want to make sure that if anything, God forbid, ever happens to your son or any of your friends' sons, that they have a place and an outlet to actually report it anonymously.
Right.
So that it doesn't affect the rest of their life and hockey career.
We're taking a quick detour from the show to bring you a special offer. Are you tired of generic financial advice that just doesn't resonate with you? We are offering our best-selling book, Financial Planning Made Personal, for the sale price of 99 cents. This book helps you find joy in the journey while planning for your ideal tomorrow. Grab your copy on Amazon or at financialplanningmadepersonal.com before the Kindle version returns to its regular price of $7.99. Before we return to the show, I have a question for you. What did you do today that brought you joy?
I think what people don't realize, well, some people, if you're connected in the hockey world, you certainly realize it, but many people don't realize, I guess, how it works. Like in juniors, you're typically living with a family, right, in their home. Is there a vetting process for that family or not? There are so many different avenues between the safety and security of the team. You hope that doesn't go awry. Then you have these coaches who are grown adults looking after basically teenage kids, right? Because that's what, for the most part, you are. And then you have living with a family. So there are so many opportunities that there's got to be that oversight to protect these players. And like you said, if the protection doesn't do its job, there has to be a mechanism for them to come out and feel comfortable about making sure that they say something so that it doesn't continue the cycle, right?
So that it doesn't continue the cycle, but then also if your son's going to say something that's not his fault to get initiated, it can't affect him then moving on in hockey. Because again, like I made that Players Tribune video, as soon as I did that, I knew I was never going to get a job in hockey ever again by just telling the truth. So there's such a power imbalance between coaches and players when you're in junior and they hold your career in their hands. If scouts call and say, this guy's a little bit of a problem. This guy's a little bit of a rat. This guy doesn't toe the line. Your son's done. It's over, right? So you accept the trauma. You accept the abuse that you know that's wrong in order, at least this is what I did in my own experience. I was like, man, I'm not going to let these guys, right, take me down. Like, I'm going to make it. So I'm just going to accept this for the next year. I'm not going to do it to other individuals next year. I'm going to try to protect them. And I'm going to get out of this. And I'm going to make it. And I did. It brought on addiction issues and these other things because that's the underlying.
Well, you don't realize that at the time, right?
Not at the time. Yeah. Yeah.
You're young. It's tough.
Absolutely. It's tough. But again, it was also a piece of me. And it's funny that we're having this conversation right now because I'm going through a lot of this transition where I'm turning 39 and I don't think that this anger and this violence and my need for holding people accountable and wanting revenge on people that have wronged me in business, it doesn't serve me anymore. I had a really tough like 2 years, and then the last week it got really dark. And so I'm like, I used the medicine and I realize now that that stuff did serve me for a really long time and I needed it. I don't think I need it anymore. So I'm going to kind of leave that behind. Yeah.
Yeah. And listen, that's growing and moving on too. That's all part of the process. So obviously we don't live in an ideal world right now where this whole situation that you kind of outline where the players feel this level of ability to have these conversations without retribution, it doesn't exist necessarily today. They may profess that it does, but I don't know that it really does.
It doesn't. Not yet. Not yet.
Right. So for players today who currently find them in a bad situation, abusive, whether it be, you know, hazing, coaching, whatever, what would you like them to know? What would you like to share with those people out there that might be in a precarious situation?
Man, if anyone out there is getting abused by somebody, I think the number one thing to understand, there's a lot of shame and guilt that comes along with that because you think it's your fault. It's not your fault. These people, the coaches that let it go that know about it and the players that are doing it are obviously traumatized. And trauma and abuse is really easy. It's easy to continue the cycle. That's a tough question because sometimes the league does have some of these outlets, depending on where they are. If they could go to somebody within the organization that they can trust, that would be a good outlet. What we did to get through all of that, yes, eventually I reported it, but what we did was all the rookies just hung out together and we would just talk. We had a Dairy Queen night all the time and we wouldn't let any of the veterans come and we would just vent. Just so I guess find some sort of outlet. And if you love what you're doing enough, then you'll find a way to sometimes deal with the bad stuff. Sometimes you, and it's your decision to make. For me, I made a decision that I wanted to be a hockey player bad enough that I was going to kind of eat this, you know what, right now to get to the next level. I was not going to let somebody hold me down. And then eventually I did. I found treatment and I found talk therapy. I've been in it. I was in it for 15 years. Then I gained this type of understanding.
Yeah. To be fair, I think that there are also very widely ranging things that could potentially happen, right?
Absolutely. Some of them are very, very innocent, like carry the bags, sit at the front of the bus. Like these sorts of things should happen, right? It's just a respect level. Show respect, you're given respect. So no, and it's not all doomsday. Don't get me wrong, but just be on guard and mind your P's and Q's and just be respectful. It's the same thing as respecting your elders. That's really what being a first year player is kind of all about.
Now, I remember, I think it was in high school or college when I was playing, there was some bit of hazing that went on with the new players, but it was like, if I'm remembering this correctly, because it was a long time ago, they usually shaved the guys' heads, like unwillingly, right?
Yeah.
Which I guess looking back now, in the grand scheme of all these things that take place, it was probably rather innocuous compared to a lot of these other things.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Right. But I remember having these guys come up to me and were like ready to do it. And I was like, listen, you could try. I'm going down with a fight. So as long as you guys are willing to come out of this with a black eye or lost teeth, like we're good to go. It never came to fruition.
That's when it all stopped, right? When a bunch of us just started swinging. We just, all right, like no more. It's been
sometimes
months.
You have to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you got to stand up for yourself, right? What do you do to a bully? If there's a bully who's bullying you, you try to, if you stand up one time, they usually stop.
Yeah. Let's talk about this, right? You have a son now. How old's he now?
He just turned 9.
Okay. So he's in those formative years, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I see very frequently is when bad things are happening, a lot of times people sit around and watch, right? They stand around as a bystander watching what's going on. How do we get more young people to be upstanders and actually intervene, say something, stand up for their fellow teammate, their fellow classmate, what have you? How do we do that?
So I think it starts with the home. It starts with the man of the home, to be honest with you. My job, I have 4 kids, I have 3 daughters, and Austin's the only boy. So we're outnumbered 4-2 by women. I make it a point to make sure that I grab him every day to have a conversation with him face to face about meditation, visualizing who he wants to be, where he wants to go, how he wants to act in school, etc. And then also making sure that I grab him at least once a week and we have our man time. Like I said, like that stat's a scary stat. I'd be interested to find out how many of those suicides are correlated with having a single parent, specifically a mom in the house. And I just think that men need men. Men need community. And in this world where they seem to be wanting to feminize everything and weaken everything, this kind of woke movement going on that I'm kind of watching from afar, men need to be men. There's nothing wrong with being a strong man. Nothing wrong with understanding my view of a strong man might be different from yours, but that doesn't make me wrong and that doesn't make you right and vice versa. So I just try to create this world that I want to see and that I think will harbor a good, respectable man. If my son ever goes out of this house and becomes a bully, it would crush me because I was bullied, you know, like, and I was that guy too. Let me be very clear, right? I just try to teach him and impart, I don't try to tell him these things because kids hate being told what to do.
Right.
I try to show him these things. Luckily, he's got YouTube. It's probably why he's all gung-ho about playing hockey now at 9, and he can see these things. I sit here in front of this camera, and I try to tell people my thought process, and I think it's valuable because of what I did, what I applied myself to, and then how I'm ever evolving and growing. So yeah, just time. I think time, one-on-one time, or in a group setting, whatever, is really, really important for men.
Listen, I agree with you. I think I have two boys, and now they're 20 and 17. And I see how they act. Like, people are shocked. They open doors. They say please and thank you. And that's because I did that, right?
Yeah, man.
I did that. They saw it. They saw my wife do that. They saw me do that. They were brought up that way.
Sponges. Isn't it remarkable how crazy these kids see everything?
They do.
The good,
whether you think
bad.
They do or not, they're watching.
Oh, I'm always looking. They're always looking up and listening. And I'm not perfect. I missed a lot of time because I was so involved in myself and suffering from these symptoms. So I'm just really grateful that I'm connected to myself and that I have this special relationship. I talk to my kids like adults. They're 9, 6, 5, and 7 months. Obviously not the 7-month old yet, but yeah, I give it to them straight. I don't sugarcoat anything.
Yeah, we've always done that. And my wife and I always were on the same page. Our job was to raise good human adults. Yep. That was our job. If we do that, then we hit the mark. So let me ask you a question. As it's clear that you still on the periphery love the time that you had in the NHL, love the time that you had with hockey. What do you think the future holds for the game? It sounded like your son's kind of playing now. I don't know if any of your daughters are too, but what do you think the future of the game holds?
I think it's obviously turning into a very skilled game during the regular season, which is kind of not strange. I mean, it's more exciting, right? They're trying to bring a different fan base to it. Why I think it's a little bit strange is because at the end of the day, when you get into a 7-game series in 4 rounds against the same team, the crux of that is to take their will to play away. So for example, if it's game 1 and it's 6-1 and there's 10 minutes left in the third and you know you're losing that game and you're probably not going to come back, you're still finishing every check. They have to win 3 more games. Yeah, you're still trying to break them down. You're trying to take their will to play away. But what's exciting, the Bedards of the world and all these kids want to do is stick handle and sauce and skate fast. And it's good that I do agree on some levels, right, that the fighting has lessened. Meaning, like, I could never understand, even while I was playing, like, these heavyweight guys, like, at the beginning of the game, just fight. It's like, what is that? I always tried to earn a fight, meaning I went and smoked somebody and then let's go to change the momentum of a game. There was always a reason. It wasn't just like two meatballs just kind of going at it. And then also you use the fight to like make sure you hold people accountable so that they don't take liberties on anybody. So, but the game I think is in a good spot, man. ESPN has picked it up. Young kids are wanting to sign up for it. I think it's just going to get faster and more exciting.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing it. So listen, Dan, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. We ask each of our guests the same last question because this is the Midland Money Mindset and we're all about joy. And that is, what did you do today that brought you joy and put you in the right mindset for success?
I told you, you caught me at the right time. I made a contract with myself over the weekend. I told you I had a really difficult week last week. I woke up at 6 a.m. I was out of the door at 6:15 and I ran and worked out until 7:15, came back to the house, saw my kids off to school, was back in my desk by 7:55 and I started to record my book from 8 to 9. That's my routine now for the next foreseeable future until I can finish that book. Working out, exercising is really important to me and it seems to put me in the right frame of mind, as well as coming home and making sure I do one thing in recovery. So whether that's meditation, breath work, or usually both within a cold plunge. So I have a cold plunge. I like cold exposure. I need to feel physically fit in order to feel mentally and spiritually fit. So those are the things I do and to prioritize my health and my mindset.
Great stuff. Are you a follower of Wim Hof?
No. No, I mean, I know of him, obviously.
Yeah, nice, but, yeah.
What's funny is this trend is getting popular, but I've been doing cold tums since I was 12 or 13 years old. Mm-hmm, they were always right. in the rooms. And right. it's great, though, yep. that this is getting popular for people, because I think it's for the mind to be able to breathe. I think some level of suffering is good if you're not raising your kids in that light where you're kind of challenging them within your own household and making them uncomfortable. Then I think you're doing them a disservice, because this world is tough. Business is tough. Yeah. Being an entrepreneur, great. Extremely tough. So yeah, so all of these things and more. There's other tools, but
yeah, sure. Yeah,
maybe for another
time. My son first went to boarding school. He was like, I'm never going in the cold tub. And we were like, hey, there's a lot of benefits to it. We encouraged him to do it.
Best.
And now he loves best. Going in there.
Oh, man.
Will he go in there for an hour? No, but he likes going in, taking a dip and staying in there for like 5-10 minutes just That's to it. Refresh and recharge. And he's gotten used to it. And he's a big body, so hopefully it'll keep him in good shape, right?
Better yeah. shape. The number one thing it does is helps make you feel lighter. So it burns off something called lactic acid. So if you've ever worked out and then the next day you feel heavy,
cramping.
That's that. Yeah. And cold exposure for just 3 minutes can help release all of that lactic acid so that you can go back and do it again the next day. And if you don't work out that day, it's just a really good reset in the morning to just get the mind and nervous system going.
Get you rolling. Yeah. So listen, Dan, we'll have all of your information in the show notes, but if people want to connect with you, learn more about what you're up to, many of the things that you just discussed, what's the easiest and the best place for them to go to find out that information?
So X is CarbonBoom13. Instagram is DanielCarcillo13. And I'm obviously on LinkedIn, Daniel Carcillo, Facebook. When this comes out, my website will already be up. So DanielCarcillo.com. We do group workshops that are free. And by the time this comes out, those will all be going. So those are all the socials. And then a couple projects that we have going on right now is Healing Realty Trust, which is we are building out the infrastructure for experiential medicine or psychedelic medicines that are approved through the FDA. So we're partnering with physicians. You have to go into the clinic to experience mm-hmm. these medicines, which that doesn't exist. Continuing the advocacy work. So just stay posted on that as well.
And when's the book scheduled to come out?
I just started. I mean, I did okay. my first hour today. I've got an AI tool that's, I should be done within 30 days.
We'll be looking for that.
Yeah, it's going to be self-published. It'll be free for probably the first like 6 months online, and I'll figure out what to do with it. And ultimately, what I want to come of it is some sort of mental health speaking tour that's cool, where like there's some tubs and gadgets on the stage that people can interact with, et cetera, and we can hit the road and show people how to use some of these tools to benefit their life.
Nice. Well, thanks again, Dan. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for sharing. Appreciate it. I appreciate you taking out the time, and enjoy the day.
Thanks, buddy. You too.
I want to thank Dan Carcillo for being a guest on the Midland Money Mindset. Dan was a force on the ice during his professional career and is a Stanley Cup champion. Now he is imposing his force to raise awareness for those suffering from mental health issues as a result of playing or simply helping people address their wellness in general. Many professional athletes struggle to find their calling following their retirements. Dan has certainly found his and continues to advocate for his fellow players, current and past, to help them address their mental health while exercising his entrepreneurial muscles too. Dan Carcillo and all that he's up to can be found across most social media platforms. All the contact information needed to find them can be found in the show notes. Thank you for joining us this week on the Midland Money Mindset. Make sure you visit our website at midlandmoneymindset.com and smash the subscribe button so you don't miss a show. We encourage you to help others find our valuable content, and please don't keep us a secret. You can also schedule an Is There a Fit call right from our website or by using the link that you'll find in the description section of your podcast player or app. And be sure to join us for our next episode to learn more about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money.
The opinions voiced in the Mittlin Money Mindset Show with Lauren Sprung are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. No strategy ensures success or protects against loss. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Guests on the Mittlin Money Mindset Show are not affiliated with CWM LLC.